The inspiration for this sermon, for this lesson, for this topic, actually came from 1 Peter 3. We were studying 1 Peter, and our studying has kind of slowed down. We started out studying a chapter or half a chapter or so a week, and we got bogged down and ended up studying about two or three verses a week lately. This particular topic, though, came from 1 Peter 3, beginning verse 8. Finally, all of you have unity of mind, sympathy, brotherly love, a tender heart, and a humble mind. Do not repay evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but on the contrary, bless. For to this you are called, that you may obtain a blessing. It's a big word there, bless. Used as a verb. Encourages us to kind of take an extreme stance there. Don't repay evil for evil or reviling for reviling, but bless. The reaction to evil wasn't more evil. In fact, it wasn't even just ignoring it or walking away from it. That word bless is an active verb. To take action, your response to evil needs to be to bless. That's where this all came from. When we studied this, we talked about turning the other cheek. You know, that's something my mom always told me to do. From a young age, turn the other cheek, son. Turn the other cheek. About 7 or 8 years old, tested that out, had a little bit of a confrontation with a neighbor, another little 7 or 8 year old. And I turned the other cheek, and he hit that one too. It didn't work out so well. I didn't understand. Turn the other cheek. What was that about? You know, it really is a simple concept. If someone hurts you, turn the other cheek. But when we put it into practice, and looking at this, I've realized this is a major flaw of mine. This is a real struggle. When we look at what it actually means to turn the other cheek, it's difficult. It's hard. It's kind of countercultural. If you understand that word, it's not what people these days would expect. It's not even what they would tell you to do. Turn the other cheek. It really takes effort, it takes humility, and it takes incredible strength. And that's what I don't have. You know, one of the things about the passage this morning in Matthew chapter 5, it's in the Sermon on the Mount. Sermon on the Mount is full of shocking teachings. If you've ever looked at it and tried to envision yourself as a first century Jewish person listening to Jesus say these things, Matthew chapter 5, the attention that he grabs when he says things like, you've heard it said, but I'm telling you. Who have they heard say these things? You know, he said, you've heard it said, thou shalt not murder. Who have they heard say that? It was the religious teachers. It was the priests. It was the scribes, the Pharisees. It was people that they trusted, that they respected as religious leaders. And Jesus goes and says, you know what? You've heard this said, but I'm changing it. All you've ever known, taught, all you've ever heard, I'm telling you different. Jesus was shocking these people with teachings that were new, that were different. And he tells them, turn the other cheek there in verse 38. This morning I want to talk about what it means to turn the other cheek. The first question I want to discuss this morning is what does it really mean to turn the other cheek? First thing I want to make sure we understand, this is not physical. I don't think Jesus is talking about a physical confrontation like I had when I was 7 or 8 years old and I turned the other cheek and that nice gentleman hit me on the other one. All right, that's not what we're talking about here. I don't think Jesus is talking about physical. What Jesus is talking about here, turning the other cheek means opening yourself up to be hurt again. When someone hurts you, be willing to be hurt again. Matthew 18, verse 21, if you will, turn over there with me. More shocking teachings from Jesus. Then Peter came up and said to him, Lord, how often will my brother sin against me and I forgive him? As many as 7 times? Jesus said to him, I do not say to you 7 times, but 70 times 7. 70 times 7. You know, that's a big number. I don't know that Jesus actually meant that, you know, 490 times, you're done. I think the message that Jesus was saying was, you forgive as often as you're sinned against. And forgiving someone, I've learned that that's taken on a different meaning. I'm not really sure what it means to forgive someone. I'm not really sure if it means when they say they're sorry, you accept it and move on, or maybe kind of cut them out, you know, the forgive but don't forget kind of thing. I do know that Jesus has taught me to treat other people like I would want to be treated. So at the very least, I do know that I need to forgive other people the way I want to be forgiven. I do know that. I can say that for sure, for certain. And it goes on, after Peter asks this question, Jesus gives the answer. We often stop there, 70 times 7, okay, answered. Jesus tells a parable. I think this parable is attached to this teaching about 70 times 7. Therefore, the kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who wished to settle accounts with his servants. When he began to settle one, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. Now, I have a little footnote there. A talent was a monetary unit worth about 20 years' wages for a laborer. I'm trying to do the math of how much I might earn in 20 years and then multiply it times 10,000. I'm going to go ahead and assume that's not a debt I could pay. That's an outlandish amount of money. And since he could not pay, his master ordered him to be sold with his wife and his children and all that he had, and payment be made. So the servant fell on his knees, imploring him, "Have patience with me, and I will repay you everything." And out of the pity for him, the master of that servant released him and forgave him the debt. Just imagine the size of that debt that was owed. He did not deny the debt was owed. He did not combat the amount. He begged for mercy. And the master, who was owed this money, just forgave it. Wish that worked these days. Just forgave the debt. But when the same servant went out, he found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. And seizing him, he began to choke him, saying, "Pay what you owe." Denarii here, I got another footnote, says there that a denarii was a day's wage for a laborer. So 100 days' wages. A little over 3 months of work. Still, that's a good bit of money, but nothing compared to 20 years times 10,000. That's nothing. It's pennies compared to what he owed. And he took the man and said he choked him, saying, "Pay what you owe." So his fellow servant fell down and pleaded with him, "Have patience with me and I will pay you." He refused and put him in prison. His fellow servants saw what had taken place, greatly distressed. And they went and reported to their master all that had taken place. His master summoned him and said, "You wicked servant, I forgave you all the debt because you pleaded with me. And should you not have had mercy on your fellow servant as I had mercy on you?" The lesson I think Jesus just taught here: when we're forgiving other people, when we have the opportunity to forgive someone, that word bless we read in 1 Peter, bless someone. I think forgiving them would be that. It may be difficult, but if we can keep in mind what we have been forgiven by God, you know, I don't know if anybody will ever owe me very much, but I can tell you for sure, whatever somebody might owe me, or the wrong someone might have done me, is nothing compared to the wrong that God has forgiven me of. Nothing anybody could ever do to me can compare to the price that Christ paid for me to be forgiven. And we put in perspective what we might have to forgive somebody of to what God has forgiven, it's nothing. It's pennies. Second thing we learn that turn their cheek means, it may mean letting go of pride and possibly even embracing shame. You know, it's turning the other cheek puts you below people, at least the way people perceive it. It puts you at their mercy. Of course, we know from a spiritual standpoint how that requires strength. It may not be perceived that way. Hebrews chapter 13. I love the book of Hebrews. Hebrews 13, verses 12 through 14 say, so Jesus also suffered outside the gate in order to sanctify the people through his own blood. Therefore, let us go to him outside the camp and bear the reproach he endured. For here we have no lasting city, but we seek the city that is to come. Our Lord suffered, and turn the other cheek, embrace the shame. We may have to. That was kind of the reason I chose the image I did, the cross. I think the cross of Christ demonstrates to the extreme what turning the other cheek really is. He didn't just forgive and forget us. He didn't repay evil for evil or reviling for reviling. Jesus blessed with the cross. And another thing, turning the other cheek, when we have the ability to turn the other cheek, that means we probably finally see the big picture. The big picture is that this world is not the end. The big picture is that there's a life to come that is much bigger, much greater, much longer, much more enduring than this life. Everything there is real. Everything here is just temporary. And when we see that big picture, we understand that whatever we do here, whatever we've gained here, whatever we've acquired, is all that's going to fade away, and all that's going to matter is God. When we see that, then turning the other cheek will be natural. Because here's the thing. My life is going to end one day. I'm going to go to heaven. But so is everyone else that I come into contact with. And the question won't be, what wrong have they done to you? The question will be, did you help them find Christ? That's what's going to matter. Your interaction with other people is going to, what's going to matter is, did you help them in their walk with Christ? And if me turning the other cheek can help somebody, by all means, I should turn the other cheek. I should be strong enough to do that. So the question then becomes, number two, why is it so hard? Why is it hard to turn the other cheek? I could go into a lot of things. Pride comes to the top of the list for me. I think that's probably the big one. I'm going to skip that one because I think that's one we're all aware of, pride. So we're going to skip that one. Number one, why is it hard? It's pretty simple. No one likes to be hurt. No one likes to be hurt. That's why if you've ever been hit by something, you may flinch the next time it comes. No one likes it. No one likes pain. The second thing, second reason it might be hard, anticipation and fear of being hurt is often worse than the pain. Fun little fact about my wife. If presented with the option while sick of taking a pill for 3 weeks to get better or having a shot to be better in 2 hours, she will be sick for 3 weeks. She is not going to get a needle. The fear and anticipation of a shot is exponentially greater than the actual physical pain from a shot. But we all know somebody like that. And probably there may be half of you that feel the same way Erica does. I would much rather take a pill for 3 weeks than get better in 2 hours. The fear of pain, the anticipation of it, is often much worse than the actual pain. And when we've suffered pain, when somebody has struck us on our right cheek, and we have the chance to turn our left, it's hard to because we don't want to get hit again. That little boy hit me when I was 7 or 8 years old. I didn't like it. I didn't want to get hit again. Nobody likes to get hurt. And then being scared of it makes it difficult to turn the other cheek. Someone is hurt emotionally. They start putting up barriers. Start putting up walls, shutting people out. Trust is broken. We've probably all witnessed this. We may have experienced this. I may be speaking to a situation you're in right now. Trust may be broken. Pain inflicted by somebody you love. It affects every relationship you have. We probably all know people who have been hurt by someone in the church and been driven away from the church because of that. We have, for our own good, we need to learn, have to find a way to turn the other cheek. I think Jesus was doing this for the people we come into contact with, but I think he taught it also because it's what's best for us. Becoming calloused and scabbed is not. And that's what happens when we refuse to open up. We put up our guard, not open. I think it's one of the greatest tools Satan's ever used, is putting up walls and defenses, making people closed. When we open up and allow ourselves to be loved by fellow Christians, it offers so much more strength than the fear brought on by pain and hurt. Another reason it's so hard, our view of the immediate obstructs our view of eternity. We are short-sighted. We see our bills, we see our tasks that we have to do, our checklist every day, day in, day out. We're getting caught up into this daily routine, this daily grind, and we forget about the big picture that is to come. That this is just very small, very little, and momentary. James chapter 4, verses 13 through 17. Come now, you who say today or tomorrow will go into such and such a town and spend a year there and trade and make a profit. Yet do you not know what tomorrow will bring? What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. As it is, you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. So whoever knows the right thing to do and fails to do it for him in his sin. You know, in the time where what's going on over in Texas right now, I can't help but wonder, the day before the flooding, what were the worries of the people there? Does it make sense? Let's say tomorrow it begins raining in New Brockton, Alabama at Mayberry, where I live, and floods half my house, and I lose all my belongings. The worries I had today, I wonder what I'll think about them then. The things I'm anxious about, what am I going to think about them when I'm facing disaster? So quickly life can turn, and the things that we have been blinded by, obstructing the view of eternity, are gone. I think we lose sight of the big picture too often, and that's one of the difficulties of turning the other cheek. We're caught up in this moment. Maybe the pain of the strike. Maybe it's not being struck again. But the immediate obstructs the eternal. So let's say, if I can be stronger, let's say I can learn to turn the other cheek, make myself vulnerable, allow other people to hurt me. What would that do? What will be the result of turning the other cheek? When I was 7 or 8 years old, I turned the other cheek. What was the result? Number one, if you turn the other cheek, you will get hurt again. You absolutely will get hurt again. But you'll leave a window of opportunity open. Because I can tell you this, regardless of who hurts you, regardless of what they did to hurt you, I know for certain that soul is lost without Jesus, period. And if I am unwilling to turn the other cheek, then I'll lose an opportunity to help save a soul. And for every time we're willing to turn the other cheek, whether it's the first time or the 490th time, I leave a window open to help save someone's soul. Instead of repaying evil for evil, reviling for reviling, turning the other cheek is a way that I bless. Second thing, I want another result. You'll be obeying Christ. Jesus said to turn the other cheek. And we'll be obeying Christ if we do. One of the things that's often overlooked is that in obedience, even when we can't see it, there's a blessing. There's always a blessing in obeying Jesus. John chapter 14 verse 15 says very simply there, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. One of the things I love is tangible, measurable evidence. We don't have a whole lot of it in some of our aspects of our lives. But one thing we do, Jesus gave us something tangible. If you love me, you'll obey my commandments. What does your obedience say about your love? That's kind of a big concept. Specifically speaking, turning the other cheek. That's a command from Jesus. If I love him, I'm going to try to obey it. It's hard sometimes. I'm going to try to obey it. 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 8. And God is able to make all grace abound to you so that having all sufficiency in all things at all times, you may abound in every good work. God is able to make all grace abound to you. There's other verses that suggest that it is impossible to outgive God. I think it's absolutely true. He's the sustainer of all things. Everything really belongs to him. You know, one of the lessons I've learned about giving, I was talking to a gentleman that I used to go to church with, and we're talking about money, and I mentioned trying to put aside money every week, and he said, look, I don't want you to do that, and I agree, that's something I need to do. I need to make sure I give money. But he said, you got to stop thinking of your money as 10% God's money, 90% my money. Everything is God's. So when I give a little bit, I'm just giving it back to him. It's his anyway. It's all his. My money, my time, my abilities. It's all his. And part of that is my obedience. And when I give that to God, he's going to give me so much more. There's no way I can give enough obedience to measure up to what he has given me and will give me. My obedience is little. Turning the other cheek's only a small part of that obedience. It's nothing compared to what he can give me and has given me. And the last result, your last blank here, you will be strengthened to help others who are hurt. Some of y'all know I like the gym. I think everybody knows that. I love the gym. And sometimes when I'm working out, I want to quit because it hurts and it's hard. But my little saying that run through my brain is, suffer now on your own time by your own choice so that you cannot suffer later involuntarily. Point being, stay healthy now, get healthy, get strong so that later on I'll feel better. That's kind of the idea. Suffering inflicted on my body creates strength. That's just a basic concept of physical fitness. I have a suspicion, a theory, that's also a concept for spiritual fitness. When we suffer, when we're hurt, when we suffer pain, it builds strength. When you are going through a hard time, hurt by someone, hurt by a situation, see it as an opportunity to gain strength. See it as an opportunity to grow. Sometimes, somewhere, someone is going to be depending on you to help them. If I've been able to take my suffering and my pain and turn it into strength, I'm better equipped to help someone else. I'm not advising going and seeking pain. I'm not suggesting you go pick fights and get hit on the right cheek so you can turn the left one. That's not what I'm saying, but I am saying when pain enters your life, stop fearing it, stop dreading it, stop flinching at it, embrace it as an opportunity to grow, to be strong, and turn that into a blessing. But really, it all doesn't matter in this life if it doesn't point to the next. And so this morning, I want you to examine your life here. Examine your life now. Put away the immediate things that are obstructing your view to eternity. And look 100 years later, from now. Was it 21:17, 100 years from now? What's it going to look like for you? I think it all connects. It all matters. Only that's going to matter is your relationship with Christ. And so this morning, if you first have not established your relationship with Christ, I encourage you to do that. There's nothing better you can do for yourself than be connected with Jesus. If you're not a Christian, please, I ask you, become one. I'd ask you too, if you're not a Christian, why not? It's not a risk. There's nothing but positive that comes from being a Christian. It's only a blessing. And so if you have not become one, I'd ask you, why are you waiting? Stop waiting. Come on. If you are a Christian and maybe you've struggled with some things, we can help you with them. Please let us do that. We'd love to pray with you. This morning, if you have a need that we can help you with, please come as we stand and as we sing.